Sandwich Publishing is an online publication and community, providing resources, perspective, collaboration and news for digital media and publishing professionals in digital media technology and audience development. Our podcast talks are designed to provide you behind the scenes and one-on-one talks with people within the industry. This is episode 4 with Trina Landro, VP of Digital Publishing Strategy at MPP Global. Hi Trina, how are you?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How's everything at MPP Global?
Things are going great. I mean, it is coming up to the end of the year. We have across the company, meaning across all our different regions, from NORAM to the headquarters in UK, as well as in Japan, you know, continuing to service publishers, which is my particular sector, as well as OTT clients and retail clients. So things are looking well and shaping up for a great remainder of our fiscal year to date.
That's really exciting. I think everyone towards the end of the year rushes to get the final goals kicked off, ticked off. So it's good to see the same happen with MPP Global. Just for our audience, just for people who don't know much about MPP Global and just about yourself, if you don't mind just giving me a bit of an introduction.
Certainly. So I'll start with MPP Global. So the company has been around for 17 years now and actually started out in the publishing space. So they were looking to solve a publisher problem of how to diversify their revenue streams, how to properly manage subscriptions. And that's really what the company's core is and what they decided to focus on. So recurring revenue and subscription management tools, that's what we offer. And then, you know, because of the successes that we had in the publishing space, we then expanded into other verticals that were in need of the same tools and had similar problems. So, you know, we expanded beyond publishing into the TV, sports, and entertainment realm. We also expanded into consumer and retail goods, especially with, you know, the spark of subscription services from a food perspective, from other merchandise and goods like Birchbox, et cetera. So those were the types of things that our company saw a need in the marketplace and created tools really to solve these issues across these different verticals. After the introduction to MPP, just personally, I am relatively recent just in terms of the company time frame. So I started at MPP in May of this year. And so I came on board for the North American team, which we're ramping up here for publisher side strategy. So my background has been in the publishing space on the sales side, on the account management side, digital specifically. And so that's, you know, when I saw what MPP was doing, what they were offering and the context that I had in the publishing space, you know, it just seemed like a perfect fit.
That's awesome. Online subscriptions is an exciting time now, particularly as the bigger players come aboard. It's not something that is recent or new, but it's just exciting that everyone else has started to get on board with it. You said MPP Global, you know, back when they started, was focusing on trying to solve their publishing problem themselves. How did they, if we can go more into detail on that, how did they try to resolve it? Did they see it in terms of just a technology problem, or did they see it in terms of, how did they approach it initially?
Got it. Well, just in regards to the publishing clients and context that they had starting out in the headquarters in the UK, it was what's taking place in the UK now is this transition from legacy tools and services, these ERP systems, these large and sometimes outdated services, and transitioning publishers in the UK into a space of having a SaaS platform where they don't have to take on these, you know, sizable capital expenditures to get these things up and running, to get it set up, and then to have it working smoothly. And then, of course, with the rapid changing pace of technology, if they wanted any changes, if someone from the marketing team was trying to test a new product, deploy a new product, they'd have to go through their developer team, assign resources, etc. And so we saw a need in the market in terms of, all right, you know, SaaS models have been tried and proven. We are able to provide our publishing clients with the ability to innovate faster, test and deploy products quickly, and then also take the burden off of them in regards to handling credit card data, which of course is incredibly sensitive information. So that's really how it started in regards to we have this technology to help publishers solve this issue of working with some of these legacy systems that are not serving their needs any longer, or at least not innovating fast enough and not, you know, rolling out new features such as a social sign-on, single sign-on, how to keep up with, you know, the rapidly changing pace of technology. And that's what we were aiming to solve. And that's what we did solve.
Understood. How do current online subscriptions work? Like, are there different types of online subscriptions people can do? What are the types of online, yeah, how does it work now? What are the different types of online subscriptions people can look towards when they are trying to monetize on based on subscriptions?
Got it. So, I mean, when you typically think of subscriptions, most people, especially in the publishing space, most people think, oh, I'm getting an annual subscription. I pay this sizable amount of dollars in every year, and then I get it, and then I renew at that point in time. Annual subscriptions then were broken down into monthly subscriptions, like, okay, let's see if you like to keep it. If not, it's not something that was typically done, but with changing consumer interest and behavior, it's like, all right, publishers then try to test that model. Let's see if you're interested and you want to pay for it in this fashion. What MPP offers is the ability to have any type of payment model, subscription model that you can conceive, meaning that whether you want to do annual, whether you want to do monthly, and then if you want to get even smaller than that into bite-sized chunks, you can do per article. And so those are like micropayments. You can even do nano payments. Because we are a payment processor and a payment gateway, and we have the ability in-house to process transactions and any type of transaction, that really gives our publishing clients the flexibility to do as they choose. So we've had clients that said, you know what, we know our readers are coming on a particular time of day, a particular day of the week, and they're not so much interested in having a long-term subscription, even monthly or weekly, so we're going to let them pay per article. And so those are the types of options and the flexibility that you have in terms of, I have tracked my consumer behavior. I know what they're looking to do. How do I best provide a package, an ability for them to purchase with the least amount of resistance and offer them exactly what they're looking for? And so we have the ability with our eSuite tool to say, hey, you want to charge people per article? Please feel free. It's more than capable. You know, from like an iTunes perspective, if you want to charge per song, per whatever the case may be across different verticals, we have this ability for you to come up with a subscription model or a payment model that reflects that.
You mentioned the main ones, so monthly subscription, annual subscriptions, per article. Are there any other subscription types of models that you've seen across MPP Global or just in general that across other sites that people have been using?
Well, our, you know, most frequently used are really like your, you can do monthly subscriptions is of course something that is most pervasive, even though people are paying, you know, it's an annual subscription, but they are paying monthly. We do have people that do things such as week passes. We have clients that do day passes. So, you know, you have full access to the content for a daily basis. And then even if to get then breaking that down, of course, more granular, you can do per article. So that's, those are really the pervasive ones, at least in my, in the publishing sector that you see across different verticals. Of course, you know, when it comes to the OTT space, we have folks that if you're interested in just purchasing access to one piece of content, meaning a show, to sports viewing, whatever the case may be. I mean, the models are similar in terms of you're accessing either bite-sized pieces of content or you're getting a full access pass across a certain time frame, whatever the case may be. But that's kind of what we predominantly see. Even, you know, we do have the flexibility for you to come up with any sort of consumption model that you so choose, meaning, you know, it can be as crazy and as varied as, if it is raining today, then we can let clients say, all right, if it's raining, we can charge clients less to access an article or access a piece of content. And then you can also bundle that with, you know, an umbrella or some sort of pass to have food delivered, something of the sort. Like, the possibilities are endless, as they so say. It really is. You have the ability to do whatever you so choose from a payment perspective.
And when can, I want to be really practical for people who listen to this. So when can publishers decide, okay, now I'm at the point where I can monetize my content, or I can, you know, put a paywall, or, you know, the other types you mentioned, how can they come to that point of deciding that? And how can they then go and step by step choose what kind of model they can do? And then what's the technical steps for them to set that up?
Got it. So in regards to publishers coming up with that decision, I mean, that again is making data actionable. You need to, with the data, and or even if you know this is something that you want to try in terms of a paid content strategy, what our tool offers is the ability for you to say, all right, I would like to either across my entire site put up a registration wall or a paywall, or I'd like to test it for a certain section of users. And so our tool really allows you the ability without developer resources to say, you know, it's pretty much a plug and play tool of, I'd like to set up a registration wall after a user that is unregistered has accessed 5 free articles. So our tool really allows you the capability to go into that section, simply do these drag and drop if then statements to say, all right, if a user's not registered and they've after the 5th article, then populate a registration wall so that they can pay with whatever bundle they so choose. So we have the ability to not only track users as they come into the site and track their behavior, what they're browsing, what their content is, and then populate offers that we feel would be best suited to them. So let's say a user's coming into the site, they are reading business and sports content, they've hit their 5 free article threshold, and then we can offer them 2 types of bundles. We can say, hey, would you like to get a monthly subscription to access all content? Or we can say, would you like a monthly subscription simply to these 2 sections, which can have different price points? And then again, the user has the ability to choose which subscription they like to continue with. And doing so within our system is really as simple as logging into our eSuite HQ, going into the back end, setting up these drag and drop rules. And then once you click publish, you know, that's rolled off across the site. So those are kind of making it practical in the steps. That's how it works. Of course, there is, in terms of implementing eSuite, there is things that are happening beforehand before you can get into the HQ and set these things up. But all of those, in terms of how things work on our side, we do have workshops with our implementation consultants so we can get a sense of a client's business, what it is they're looking to do, make sure that they have the training for the tools, as well as a very robust resource center so they can access the information anytime. And of course, there's always access to us. So that's kind of a bigger, broader view of things. But really for us, once you have access to eSuite, it is as simple as going in, setting up the parameters that you want, clicking publish, and these things are live.
I understand. How much on average do the MPP Global's clients traffic, how much is it on average? And like, do you see like a correlation between the amount of traffic they get per month versus potentially the revenue? Or is that something that you guys don't have? You can't see that data?
So we can see that data. However, with each of the clients that we work with, the data belongs to them. So we can, you know, process, handle, transact all of that data, but the client's data is theirs, and so that information is confidential.
The reason I'm sort of asking as well, just again, back to the point of helping the publishers who are more smaller, coming to the point of, you know, deciding to do an online subscription, do they have to look at numbers? Or I know that you explained more about them seeing patterns and then, you know, trying to give them offers and testing it out. Is numbers important in creating a subscription product, or what are your thoughts around that?
When you mean numbers, are you saying if the higher the traffic I have, then that's when I should make a call to implement a paid content strategy?
That's right, yeah.
Okay, got it. So that is not necessarily the case. So we do have, again, clients that all their content is free and their concern about implementing not just a paywall in terms of you need to subscribe to access the content, but just putting up some sort of registration wall to say, hey, to continue to access this information, give us, you know, register, i.e. giving us an email address or some other piece of information about you. So several publishers in this space are concerned that if they do put up some sort of paywall or a registration wall, that their traffic will drop and that will then impact their advertising revenues. What we consult clients on is that our tool is here to give you the opportunity and the flexibility to have diversified revenue streams beyond or complementing or beyond ad revenues only. So in the case of some clients that are concerned about, you know, I'm about to implement a paywall, is how drastically is this going to affect my traffic? So like, as I mentioned before, you can test it out. You can say, all right, 50% of the users that come to the site go through the flow that they've had before. Nothing has changed. 50% we're going to test with a paywall strategy. And then, so again, it's just giving you this massive toolbox to say, I want to test it out and see how this works. If with the 50% that, you know, has gone through the paywall journey don't convert into a subscriber after a certain period of time, then you can internally, you guys can, you know, decide if this is a strategy you want to continue with or whatever the case may be. That's certainly not always been the case. We have clients that are like, all right, we have tried a monthly subscription model, and then we also tried bite-sized chunks of content, and we've noticed that we have better conversion rates with bite-sized chunks of content, or it can be in the opposite direction. It really is up to, you know, the publisher clients specifically, what they've seen working for them after, you know, they've tried and tested things, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and then, you know, tweaking and optimizing it along the way. What we're able to offer our publishers is this, you know, massive toolbox to say, hey, this is something that you can try and test, see how it works, optimize it if it isn't producing the results that you were expecting. And so that's really the biggest benefit. Here's this toolbox that you can utilize to do a myriad of things to get people to convert into paid subscribers.
What are some of the common paid content strategies that MPP Global clients use? Just more, what are they more common ones that they use, or does each client that you have tailor specifically to their own revenue strategy or revenue strategy?
Got it. Yes. So most clients, again, tailor it to their specific revenue strategies and revenue goals. What some of the common ones you'd have, the freemium type model, meaning users will have access to certain amounts of content for free. And then after they've reached that threshold, then they're asked to register or pay. It depends on how a client would like to go. We do have some clients that, you know, the minute that you hit land on their site, there is that registration wall and you only premium members have access to any of their content. So it can go either way. It really is up to the individual client and what their goals are and how they'd like to implement it. But we offer the ability for them to do whatever they so choose.
Understood. I'd like to just take our conversation just a bit a higher level in terms of the industry. So we've seen recently Google, Facebook, Medium as well, Twitter to some extent, they've released their own subscription products for their content. What are your thoughts around their product releases and how do you best work with them in complementing with your website subscription products?
Got it. So in terms of these different platforms rolling out a subscription model, it just supported what MPP Global has been doing in the space this long in terms of there is certainly a market for users to pay for premium content. So that was definitely, it was for the industry, I think it was a great thing in terms of, you know, showing that paying for content is not an anomaly. Paying for content, especially for premium content, is the direction that many publishers are going into. And it's a way of, you know, diversifying your revenue stream. So that was a great industry win, as I would say, in terms of how to work with these different mediums. I know when Facebook launched their subscription model in instant articles, it was definitely something that a lot of publishers paid attention to. And they were, you know, their interest was definitely piqued as to how they'd be able to utilize it. Because in terms of publishers having their content across multiple areas, sites, platforms, et cetera, of course, their primary revenue driver and their primary source is to have people land on their pages. But in terms of social sharing, it's an opportunity for users to discover their content through these multiple platforms. And so working in conjunction with a Facebook, with Google News, is an opportunity for them to reach more people that are interested in their types of content. So like from an industry perspective, I think it's a great direction for things to be heading so that publishers would have the ability to not just have users coming directly to their site, but also they'd be able to, you know, earn revenue and subscription revenue from multiple different platforms. So I think it's a great way to go.
What's the catalyst in them actually deciding to release products, subscription products? Do you think it might be influenced on from the OTT and the retail sector because they're with the subscription products? Or do you think, like you said, it's just more that there's now an appetite for quality content?
I think definitely in the times that we're in with the pervasiveness of fake news, things of that sort, that for verified, trusted sources of news, information, and content, that was something that sparked this transition. That's my thoughts and feedback in the publishing space. I also do think that with declining ad revenues for many publishers being an issue, the opportunity for them to diversify and say, okay, there's this product that we've been offering for free for however many years. The only product that folks have been paying for has in many instances been the print edition, or even if we've done a e-print edition. So how can I then continue to provide the premium content that I'm doing and then diversify these revenue streams? And so I think that looking into the subscription models, you know, taking a page from the book and of OTT providers, et cetera, was also something else that led to this transition in the publishing space, especially.
Why do you think publishers always seem to lag behind in terms of even innovation, even though publishers are supposed to be seen as innovators, but even especially in the subscription space?
interesting question. I think because it is one of the first mediums, because again, you're always seeing these articles on, oh, is print dead? You know, when the e-readers came out, things of that sort, there's always been this massive shock and belief that, you know, print is dead. The publishing industry is not going to survive. However, the publishing industry has always, even though it may be slow, they've always found a way to get up to speed. And so I also think that it's an opportunity for technology providers that serve the publishing space. That's really their biggest opportunity. It's the ability to say, listen, when digital first came out and publishers were realizing that people were accessing their content even on websites that were not necessarily the best, or, you know, the user experience was not premium, they started to realize that more people are accessing their content via digital than they are on print. And then the same thing happened in mobile. People are accessing my content and my website on mobile as they are as opposed to desktop and then as opposed to print. So even though they may be slow on the curve and they take their time dipping their foot into the waters with new technologies, one thing that has never changed is that the publishing industry hasn't gone anywhere. People are always going to need the news. People are always going to need content. And so the publishing industry is definitely here to stay. It certainly, with platforms such as Medium, with people, you know, gathering and reading news on platforms like Facebook and other social media platforms, the publishing industry has just had to figure out ways to adapt to the changing times and how people are accessing their content. So it's definitely, you know, been a trend that they've been, you know, they're certainly not early adopters in any sense of the word, but they always find a way to adapt.
Do you think that this is an advantage that they take their time in trying to figure out what the best way through technology is to be able to cater to their audiences, like the bigger publishers? Or do you think they're just losing revenue and they're just being... I know you mentioned a bit how they are slow to the curve, but do you see that as an advantage or disadvantage?
I certainly see that as an advantage simply because, you know, this is a medium that has been around for centuries. So it would definitely not be prudent, you know, wise for them to just with, hey, here's a new social media platform that came out, let's just shift the direction and let's all utilize this new platform and get rid of our print publication. I certainly think it is advantageous to them to take their time, see how these new technologies pan out, because in some instances they may rise and skyrocket to be Facebook, or in some instances they may not last. So I do think it's definitely beneficial and advantageous to publishers to see how these new platforms are working and going, take their time to see how their audience is engaging with them, and then making the change.
I agree as well. Otherwise, if you're being too rash and one mistake and you lose that audience, so I mean, it's hard to get them back. The one thing that I noticed as well is with each of the subscription platforms, they have their own payment system and everything else. Is MPP Global looking at a way to integrate the payment systems together, or do you have to take each of them as a separate silo and trying to just generate revenue from each subscription product that's on each different platform? What's your thoughts on that? Do you have to take a holistic approach, or do you have to take a platform approach to subscriptions?
Are you saying, like, for instance, if I am on Facebook and I'm one of the approved publishers that can do that, as well as I'm also publishing my content on Medium, et cetera? Is that kind of...
Yeah, you're publishing content on Medium, you're publishing content on Facebook in a subscription product, and then you've also got your website, which is a subscription product as well, with the content on your website. In terms of, do each of those platforms have different payment systems, or like can you integrate the payment systems together, or how would it work if someone wants to get access to the publisher's content across different platforms?
Got it. So, I mean, because these subscription tools and services are still relatively new, and again, like, so Facebook's rollout of their subscription service is with a handful of publishers. So these subscription models across these multiple platforms are not yet, you know, widespread. They're certainly being tested on a small scale with, you know, sizable publishers. So in regards to, like, the integration of the payment systems, et cetera, we're not there yet. You know, OTT has kind of led the space in terms of being able to access, you know, this network shows on, you know, one subscription service like Hulu, and then you can do it on Amazon Prime, et cetera. The publishing space isn't there yet. It's now, like, 2017 has been the year where Facebook and Google News, et cetera, have now launched these subscription services so that publishers can try to venture into the space. But I do believe, similar to how, you know, it rolled out for the OTT space, that there will be disparate payment systems. And that's how we're going to have to start, in terms of, you know, you're going to have revenue coming in from this platform, another platform, and you're going to have to work with it as is. But then I do see an opportunity, again, for someone to create a holistic approach to say, okay, I know that there, you know, I have revenue coming in from these multiple platforms, from these multiple services, and let's try to aggregate that.
Like, I hope that is as well, because it will make it easier, in my opinion, for publishers to work with each platform as well.
Definitely, from a, you know, payment standpoint, from a reporting standpoint, from an optimization standpoint, certainly. But we're definitely not there yet in terms of, you know, right now the publishers are deciding on a paid content strategy, and they're doing so for their internal products. So they're saying, you know, for my print, my digital, for my e-mag, then for internally, I'm going to, you know, roll this out. And then I have one sole, you know, payment system and subscription management solution. But again, as, you know, Facebook allows any and everyone to be part of their subscription model system, then that's certainly going to change things. And then, of course, as more follow suit, it's certainly, you know, you're going to have what, anywhere from 3 to 5 to more avenues of income coming in. And then there's definitely an opportunity for, you know, aggregating that.
How does the integration, like you mentioned, with the Hulu and Amazon Prime example, with the OTT space, how you mentioned Amazon Prime and Hulu being able to combine the unified payment system, how do you think MPP Global will be able to do something similar for publishers with the website and the other platforms, combining them together, the payment system for the subscription product?
Well, in regards to like how it's handled now, I think is an opportunity. I mean, in regards to like the OTT example, like there's still separate payment systems taking place, because Hulu's monthly charge is separate from Amazon's monthly charge, separate from, you know, Sling, Box, etc. So all of them currently in the OTT space have their subscription fees are separate, and then their management systems, I believe, are definitely separate. But in regards to the opportunity to aggregate this, I think for, you know, MPP Global, there is an opportunity to provide multiple different service providers and multiple different publishers the opportunity to combine their subscription management and the recurring revenue management in one place with us. So that, I think, is an opportunity, but it would be working with multiple different providers in order to do that, if that makes sense. It just, in terms of, you know, where we are in the space, where everyone is still working separately in terms of how they're taking payments and then the services that they're offering. So we're not there yet in terms of, you know, having a central solution to manage that, because it would require working with multiple different providers.
I understand. I guess it's still a bit of a tricky area to sort of determine what the best way is to work together on that solution.
Yeah.
Let's look back at, you know, past success and look at today. You mentioned, you know, before we started our talk now, that, you know, they had some pretty good wins with Irish Times and La Quip. Are you able to elaborate more on what you guys did there for both of them?
Certainly. So in regards to these two publications, what eSuite, which is our, you know, toolbox, as I like to call it, or our subscription revenue management platform, what we provided to the Irish Times and the Keep were the opportunity to, one, implement a paid content strategy. So these publishers came to us, they knew that this was something that they wanted to roll out. And so whether they were starting from zero, meaning that they had a previous subscriber base, whether across digital products or digital and print, or so whether they started with subscriber numbers or they were starting completely from scratch, our eSuite allowed them to roll out and test new products. It allowed them, of course, to have an incredibly seamless and simple subscription management service. And then also for subscribers that they did acquire, it allowed them to retain these customers with our churn management solution. So for in both instances, we were able to work with each particular client, see what their needs were, whether it was, you know, rolling out a completely new paid content strategy, or if it was tweaking their current paid content strategy and how they can improve and increase it, and or if there was an issue of they were losing customers in the funnel through, you know, whether to not being able to update card information, not being able to access payments, whatever their particular issue was, eSuite had a tool or a module in order to solve it. So that's you know, just some of our past wins there. And it's something that we're continuing to do for clients. We, you know, with each individual client, we sit down, we have a conversation, we get very clear on understanding what their issues are, what their needs are. And then we work with them in terms of showing you this is eSuite, this is how it can be utilized, and this is how it can solve the issues that you're having.
I believe it was mentioned in MVP Global's previous news that I think it was for the Irish Times that they were able to reduce their credit card failure rate down to a few percent just because of the system there. What are some of the common errors and stuff that happen with credit cards, and how can people manage their retention with people's payments details?
Certainly. So we have a module within eSuite, so one of the tools in our toolkit, called Retention and Recovery. And so we, you know, after being in the business for so many years, we have an algorithm in place that allows us to identify different types of churn. So what most publishers have an issue with in regards to churn is what we call involuntary churn. So that's things such as credit card information is not accurate. So whether someone reported their card lost or stolen, they got a new one and we don't have their updated payment information, whether the card has expired and we don't have that frequent information, or simple things such as when we tried to take the payment because when it was at a time that was high flagged for fraud, all these different things that come into play when it comes to processing payments, our retention and recovery module solves for. So we have what we call automatic card updater. And so that allows us to retrieve from the credit card, you know, schemes, MasterCard and Visa themselves, updated card information on clients. And so that's one way that we're able to reduce churn for clients by saying, listen, we're not going to have any sort of payment breakage with, you know, something as simple as updated card information because we do this automatically for you. We also utilize a tool such as suppression windows. So that means we don't try to take a payment at times that, you know, credit cards companies are, you know, being more stringent or paying closer attention because those are usually high window times for fraud. So we wouldn't necessarily try for a payment at 3 a.m. on a Sunday when it's not usually a time that transactions are being made. So those are things that we put into place as well, these different types of suppression windows. And then another thing that we have is something called retry rules. So we can set this up and we can try to get a payment from a card, you know, up to 8 times. And so those are the retry rules that we have until we receive a successful payment. So, you know, those are some of just the tools that we have in place to say, you know, these are simple things that are causing payment breakage, but the payment breakage is translating into so much dollars for our clients. And with these tools in place, we're able to reduce churn. And in the instance of Irish Times itself, reducing churn significantly for clients, taking it from, you know, double digits down into single digits.
I just wanted to clarify as well, with the MasterCard and Visa details, would you go and fetch someone's name from there without obviously going breaking the confidentiality and just making sure that their details are current, valid? And if it's not valid, then ask MasterCard and Visa to then give you the updated details? Is that how that component works?
Yes and no. So in terms of when someone is making a payment, we're not going and fetching this information without any sort of previous authorization or approval from a client. So once that initial payment has been made, and then when it comes time to renew said subscription, so whether it's on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis, whatever the case may be, after already having authorization from the user, if, you know, let's say this user has been a client of yours or a subscriber of yours for a year and a half, and most cards are expired within 2 years. So this client has been a subscriber for a year and a half, and we're noticing that their expiration date is coming up soon. What we have the ability to do, because we are a level one PCI DSS compliant payment processor and payment gateway, we have a relationship with, you know, MasterCard and Visa to, as, you know, this payment gateway to say, hey, we see that this card is about to expire. You know, usually credit card companies are sending you your new card way before the old one expires so that you as a consumer don't have any lag in the ability to use your card. And so when a new card number has been issued, we're able to get it automatically from the credit card providers. So that's something that we have the ability to do as a payment gateway. So it's certainly not something, we're not going behind anyone's back and saying, hey, give us this new information unbeknownst to you. This is something that's already been authorized.
That's good to really clarify. I appreciate that. I guess with, you know, we spoke about the technology side about retention, but, you know, there's also the marketing side, or just put the business side, where you've got people who, you know, subscribe and say, who forget about the subscriptions, for example, and then they say, oh, I forgot I had the subscription, I want to cancel now. Is there any retention strategies or common things that you've seen, you know, MPP Global's publishing clients have done or that you know of, which can help our audience in terms of retention?
Yeah, so in other than, you know, the credit card specific, you know, details, what we have the ability to do if we see clients are looking to voluntarily churn is what we call win back campaigns. So we have, again, within our retention and recovery model, the ability for clients to create these customer journeys to win them back if they have expressed that they are, you know, I'm no longer interested, I would like to unsubscribe. And so we can create a journey just to find out why. Why are you looking to cancel your subscription? Is it because the cost is too high? Is it that the content is not pertinent to you? You're not, whatever the case may be, beyond just, you know, cancel and I'm no longer interested. We can create these flows to find out exactly why and then offer the client, again, another opportunity to resolve whatever issue it is they had. So let's say a client is looking to cancel and they said, we asked why, and they said, you know, it's too costly for me. Within, you know, automatically we can, you know, personalize this customer's journey to say, all right, it was $10.99 a month for you. You said it's too high. How about, you know, you try us again for another 3 months at a lower price point? And so these are things that we have in place that, again, you can easily test and deploy to keep folks within your pipeline and within your funnel. So those are just some ideas that we have. And then, you know, of course, pre-built tools in place that our publishers use quite frequently, actually, to better understand the consumers. Why are they looking to cancel? And then, of course, let's try to win them back with something that's pertinent to them. So again, because we have the tools to track users, identify their behavior, what do they like best, we can say, hey, you know, we know you originally signed up for, you know, business, but then we've noticed that you're accessing a lot of entertainment content. Would you like X? Would you like Z? And so we can personalize and customize these offers to users to retain them and keep them in the funnel.
How do you find, though, that even though you provide, like, for example, publishers might provide lower prices for a few months, how do you find that being effective? Because if the major reason was the fact that the price was too high or they can't afford that subscription anymore, how do you think that fact that you've done that works? It helps audience members or readers to stay on?
So in some instances, it is, again, tracking the user behavior and then, you know, offering them what we feel will work best or giving them choices so that they can then choose what works best for them. So for some folks that have, you know, come in on a monthly subscription and they've realized, you know, if they've given a reason, you know, I'm not accessing or using the content as frequently as I thought, we have the data that each client can then use to say, okay, we've seen that, you know, you signed up for a monthly subscription for an all access pass, but that's not how you've been consuming the content. And that's a reason why you're not trying to pay this price point for full access, then there's the opportunity to give them bite-sized chunks. Hey, are you interested in just accessing content on a daily basis? Let's say you're reading the news when you're traveling for work, and so I want a commuter pass. Then that's something else that we can offer them. So it isn't necessarily saying, hey, I can no longer afford it. It's figuring out then a monthly subscription wasn't working for you at X price point, but would a commuter pass work for you? Would, you know, I just want to access this article because that's all the information I'm interested in. It's having the data and then making that data actionable and saying, okay, this is what we tried. This wasn't working for you or your behavior changed. And then here's something else that might better suit your behavior and better suit your needs.
So it's an interesting point that you bring up. So does that mean that publishers should have multiple options in their paid content strategy, or should they try to make one work and then see how it goes?
Definitely the latter. There is, again, we're in the age of personalization and customization, and that is certainly prevalent in the publishing space. So again, to best serve your customers and best give them what they need, it definitely behooves a publisher to have multiple different content strategies. Now, I'm certainly not saying that you should try all of them and see what works, but definitely, you know, publishers in their internal teams, they have their objectives and the goals that they're trying to hit, and then they can try and test multiple offers to see what works best. Because at the end of the day, what publishers are trying to do is best serve their audience and their customers. And so we're giving you the opportunity and the flexibility to choose and have multiple different products. So you can certainly try and test what works and see, you know, whatever fits
What are the average number of products that your clients have, MPP Global clients have?
I can't, you know, make this like general benchmark, but in many instances, you know, we've seen either two or three that are taking place at the same time. So like if a user cherry picks, there's an opportunity. Do you want a monthly subscription for all access? Do you want like a day pass? So it's either two or three that is usually seen across different publishers.
Yeah, no, I understand it. Definitely, this is generalization. It's not specific. So yeah, I just want to make that clear as well. Is there anything else like creative strategies and retention strategies like marketing plays that you've seen as well? Or are the ones that you mentioned previously, they're just the main ones that has worked?
Ones discussed before, kind of the strategies that have worked that I've seen in the past. Certainly excited for new things that come along and that, you know, marketing teams and creatives come up with. And whatever they do come up with, it's something that our eSuite tool can handle. So certainly excited to see what comes in the future.
What would you like to see come to the future then? If, yeah, that other creatives and publishers in-house should be looking into them?
Nothing comes to mind at this exact point.
That's fair enough. Okay, let's look ahead now just in terms of the future of online subscriptions and MPP Global as well. So if we could just start off with MPP Global, what's the future plans of MPP Global? And, you know, personally for yourself, for your professional development, what's your future plans?
Got it. So this year, MPP Global actually raised their first round of funding. Now, mind you, the company's been around for 17 years, so it was an incredibly exciting time for MPP in regards to, you know, getting this funding and using that, of course, to grow and scale the company. So, I mean, the headquarters is in the UK, as I mentioned. The NORAM team, which I just started on in May, has certainly expanded while we're here. We also have offices in Japan as well as Dubai. And so in terms of the future of MPP, it is certainly seeing the company scale and grow so that we're able to service our different verticals across the globe, because and just expanding the teams that we do have in the current outpost in NORAM, you know, Europe, Middle East, as well as Asia. And then again, we are a technology company. And so it is, of course, a massive influx into our product and the innovation. Because again, as we work with our different clients, there's always, you know, every client is unique and every client has unique needs. And so when it comes to what clients need, how we can not just solve their direct problem, but improve and iterate the product so that it's, you know, if this has been an issue for one of our publishing clients or one of our OTT clients, how can we roll this into the product as a whole so that we can service all with this update or this innovation? So that's certainly something that I'm excited to see for the future of MPP, as we are ending out the calendar year, but it's still a fiscal year for us. And so having the team grow, having, you know, new counterparts that come on board at all times, and seeing, of course, the product continue to stay at the forefront and providing all the tools that our clients are requesting. Those are the things I'm excited about in terms of the future of MPP.
Any product sneak peeks you can provide us that you guys, MPP is working on?
Nothing I can reveal at this time.
Okay, fair enough. I have to ask, so.
Indeed.
How about in terms of your professional development how do you see your professional development progress, and what advice would you give to others who would want to be in the technology space in publishing?
So in terms of my professional growth and development, I mean, it is always excited to work at a technology company, especially one like MPP, because we are, as I like to call myself, a technology consultant, because what is first and foremost is how can we solve a problem that you're having? And then once we can solve your problem, how do we do that with technology? So for me, well, understanding and working in the publishing space has been exciting, because even though, you know, publishers have, and publishing entities, I should better say, may have been, you know, slow to adopt certain the new technologies, they certainly are the longest lasting and the most pervasive. So it's always exciting when new platforms come about, when current platforms are in this age of, you know, Facebook subscriptions and Google News, et cetera, are embracing and providing opportunities for publishers, you know, to get their news out there. Again, it's a great space to be in regards to using technology to solve a problem for people that have been around for years decades, centuries. So for me, it is just continuing to work with publishers, whether slow to adopt or ones that are, you know, willing and able from an organizational standpoint to jump into new spaces sooner. But at the end of the day, it is the ability to solve problems for folks that are providing us with tantamount pieces of information, as i.e. our news, and working to solve any issues they have. But like, that's what got me into the publishing space first and foremost. It's content is king. We all need information. And these, you know, the publishers are the ones that do that for us. And then how to, you know, I'm getting to solve issues that they have with technology. So that's how I'm in the space. It's why I'm in the space. And advice for anybody that's in the space, it's just a matter of being on the technology side of things. It is an exciting and interesting place to be when it comes to working in the publishing industry.
Awesome. And what do you see, looking ahead, what do you see the future of the online subscription space being for publishers? And how do publishers play a role, and how would publishers be impacted moving forward?
So in the online subscription space in particular, I definitely see it expanding and growing. I mean, 2017 was a great year in regards to people understanding that, you know, subscription revenue for content is certainly a viable avenue. I mean, the New York Times was one of the biggest publishers that did it first from a pervasive scale with a company that size, and people saw that it worked, and they've been doing it for quite some time. To have, you know, Facebook come on board, to have other platforms come on board in terms of understanding that paying for content is a viable revenue stream was great in the space. And so I'm excited for 2018 and years to come in regards to this being a model that can, you know, be close to or even get on par with advertising revenues, as important as that has been for the publishing industry. So that's what I'm excited about, and that's where I see things going.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us. I really appreciate the talk that we had. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
All the best.
Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on episode 4 of the Strategy Publishing Podcast. Speak to you next time.